Chapter 7. The season was drawing to its dusty end, and everyone I knew was arranging to go away. Mrs. Strickland was taking her family to the coast of Norfolk, so that the children might have the sea, and her husband, Gough. We said goodbye to one another, and arranged to meet in the autumn. But on my last day in town, coming out of the stores, I met her with her son and daughter. Like myself, she'd been making her final purchases before leaving London, and we were both hot and tired. I proposed that we should all go and eat ices in the park. I think Mrs. Strickland was glad to show me her children, and she accepted my invitation with alacrity. They were even more attractive than their photographs had suggested, and she was right to be proud of them. I was young enough for them not to feel shy, and they chattered merrily about one thing and another. They were extraordinarily nice, healthy young children. It was very agreeable under the trees. When, in an hour, they crowded into a cab to go home, I strolled idly to my club. I was perhaps a little lonely, and it was with a touch of envy that I thought of the pleasant family life of which I'd had a glimpse. They seemed devoted to one another. They had little private jokes of their own, which, unintelligible to the outsider, amused them enormously. Perhaps Charles Strickland was dull, judged by a standard that demanded above all things verbal scintillation, but his intelligence was adequate to his surroundings, and that is a passport not only to reasonable success, but still more to happiness. Mrs. Strickland was a charming woman, and she loved him. I pictured their lives troubled by no untoward adventure, honest, decent, and by reason of those two upstanding, pleasant children, so obviously destined to carry on the normal traditions of their race and station, not without significance. They would grow old insensibly, they would see their son and daughter come to years of reason, marry in due course, the one a pretty girl, future mother of healthy children, the other a handsome, manly fellow, obviously a soldier, and at last prosperous in their dignified retirement, beloved by their descendants, after a happy, not unuseful life, in the fullness of their age, they would sink into the grave. That must be the story of innumerable couples, and the pattern of life it offers has a homely grace. It reminds you of a placid rivulet meandering smoothly through green pastures and shaded by pleasant trees, till at last it falls into the vasty sea. But the sea is so calm, so silent, so indifferent, that you are troubled suddenly by a vague uneasiness. Perhaps it's only a kink in my nature, strong in me even in those days, that I felt in such an existence, the share of the great majority, something amiss. I recognized its social value, I saw its ordered happiness, but a fever in my blood asked for a wilder course. There seemed to me something alarming in such easy delights. In my heart was a desire to live more dangerously. I was not unprepared for jagged rocks and treacherous shoals, if I could only have change. Change and the excitement of the unforeseen.